Welcome to the Two Daft Yanks Podcast, the show that brings you tidbits from all aspects of the soccer world. Sometimes serious, sometimes zany, always opinionated. Now, here are your hosts, Chad Smith and Corey Chatelain.
This is the Two Daft Yanks Podcast. Greetings to you wherever you may be. I am your host, Chad Smith, broadcasting from the Mile High Two Daft Yank Studios. And joining me this week from the Polar Two Daft Yank Studios is my co-host, who has just as many league goals this season as Mario Balotelli, Corey Chatelain.
Yeah, that's, man, thanks for the intro. It's, what can I say? I mean, it's true that, you know, I have as many league goals as Balotelli, I have as many league goals as Ricky Lambert, and I have as many league goals as Diego Maradona currently as well. So, you know, I'm looking for a contract extension is what I'm getting at.
No, we'll not hold such negotiations in the public. Sorry, no. Denied.
No, see, that's where you go. Sure, you get a 1,000,000% raise. 1,000,000% times zero is zero. Boom, math.
There we go.
Yeah.
So there we go. So welcome to the show, folks. We're very happy to be here. There is much to talk about, as always, but we are just going to take a small little slice, a little slice of goodness this week on Two Daft Yanks. And here's a rundown for you. We're going to talk about the MLS playoffs. Then we're going to talk about Red Card Sunday in the EPL.
Bloody Sunday.
Yeah, then we're going to talk EPL quarter poll. And we'll get into that later, but if you have been listening to the pod the past month or so, you'll understand. And then we're going to finish up the podcast with talk about Qatar 2022, because it has reared its ugly head yet again.
Yeah, it's going to be the issue that won't go away, or you know, the problems that won't go away that'll fester and just get worse as we get closer.
So, with that in mind, let's get the studio crowd fired up and let's talk some footy.
More fired up than the Chelsea crowd, eh? Eh, Mourinho?
Oh, jeez, wow. That's nice. I like that.
Yeah.
I was going to say, of course, thank you to everybody who listens to the show. Remember, you can find us on Android devices, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher Radio. And then, of course, for your Android, or not Android, for your iPhone peoples, iTunes. So please, if you like the show, tell someone about the show, review the show, let more people find us, because you know what? This may be a little, you know, out of line, but we think that we offer a better product than other podcasts who just like to bitch and moan and complain about things.
Or even the professional ones who constantly have really bad sound and half their panel gets dropped there in the middle of the show.
That's true.
Which always amuses me.
So as an amateur sound engineer, I'm very happy with myself. Anyway, that's enough about that. So anyway, thank you. So let's get going here now. You know, we've been a little rough on the MLS, Corey. But you know it is playoff time.
Yeah, especially me. But, you know,
and everybody gets playoff fever. So, you know, the playoffs started this week. I'm just trying to remember who played. The Galaxy were involved. I think the Crew played. DC United. You got Seattle and Dallas. So a lot of teams are playing. And I know Corey sat down and watched a lot of these games. Took some very good detailed notes. And now we are going to present you, and we will do this throughout the MLS playoffs, Corey's winners and losers of the last few days in the MLS playoffs. So, sir, can you please give me your number one winner in these first initial MLS playoff matches?
Yeah, now this is a you know, if anybody can find these bets on, you know, those Euro sites that you're not supposed to go to, make sure you put down a C note or two on this, but because this is a surefire winner right here. The winner, and this is going to go for pretty much every round of the playoffs, the winners are the owners. And then the losers, of course, are American soccer as a whole. Oh, see, we pulled a fast one. So, yeah, there you go. There's my weekly kick MLS segment.
So the owners are the winners.
Yeah. Pay up.
Because they're raking in the cash.
Yes. Yeah, my favorite playoff matchup was the one that wasn't televised.
Yes, that was great too, huh? Last week, you have a knockout game, and so all the MLS journalists are going on and on about, oh, this is what makes, oh man, these wild card MLS matches are great. It's win or go home. And then it's not on national TV. Hey, good job there, MLS.
Yes. Win, go home, or never be shown.
No. If only there was another competition like that in this country or anywhere else, you know, that was, you know, a single elimination knockout tournament. It's just too bad those don't exist.
Yeah, because you know who would really benefit from that? It's college basketball. They should try that.
Yeah, they should.
Yeah.
But anyway, I really meant to say cough, cough, U.S. Open Cup gets no play. But hey, that's just me.
Well, you know, you can't let some certain people know that other clubs or that actual clubs exist and not franchise.
So maybe that's what we'll do. So we are the self-proclaimed number one proponents of the FA Cup. But I think from now on, because we refuse to cover the MLS seriously, I think we should cover the – as long as an NASL and lower league teams are involved, we will devote some time to the U.S. Open Cup when it kicks off again next year.
Works for me.
Does that sound good? That sounds good.
Yeah, and then once it's just nothing but MLS teams left, we'll then turn it into the fake North Korean style update.
Yes. Or the Baghdad Bob update. Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. I like it.
Okay. Awesome. All right, let's get back into the EPL. Sorry, people. Some of you probably got really happy there that we. You thought we were seriously going to talk about MLS in a serious fashion. Well, the joke's on you.
Whoa. Yeah, I want to take it seriously one day.
Yeah. Well, as soon as the league is serious about being serious, we'll be serious about being serious seriously.
Yeah, I mean, I'll even throw down $5 and sponsor Chivas USA.
Well, they're defunct now, so.
And that's why I'm only giving them $5.
Okay.
Come on, I'm not going to give them 10.
All right. Yeah. Let's close this with the space gong. We'll see how it sounds today. Ready?
Sure.
Ooh, that sounded like a real gong. No space gong today.
Oh, see, it sounded spacey to me. Maybe it's the connection.
Maybe it is the connection. It sounded pretty clear to me. Anyway, let's get into this Manchester derby, which actually, you know, in the post-match interview, Louis van Gaal said derby.
Ooh, interesting.
It's interesting. Yeah, anyway.
Maybe he's a horse fan, or maybe he's a
the
horse
Manchester racing derby
fan.
/ derby, depending on who you are. And so everybody watched it. Everybody knows Manchester City won 1-0. So let's just talk about some of the, you know, the flashpoint issues here.
Sure.
And let's talk, obviously, with the Chris Smalling double yellow red card situation. And I'm waiting for you to comment. That's what that silence means.
Oh, no. Well, yeah. Well, you know, there's been multiple incidents where I've seen so far this year where people have tried the George Best, Thierry Henry, steal the ball from the goalkeeper thing. And I don't know why people still do it, because even though it's technically a good tackle, it never gets called that way. As long as the ball's out of the keeper's hand, it's just, you know, that's one of those special keeper bubble plays that's never going to get called correctly.
Well, I guess I didn't watch the match, and I only saw the short replay. Now, obviously, there are situations where you have to allow the keeper to be able to kick the ball from, you know, like a dead ball thing, but this was when the ball was live, I'm assuming, then?
Yes. Which, like I said, technically, once the ball leaves the keeper's hands, and actually, now that I think about it, I seem to remember this rule was actually changed, but yeah, 20, 30 years ago, if the ball left the keeper's hands, you could technically tackle it off his foot before, or you know what I mean, while it was in the air. But like I said, that's the last person I saw to do it successfully was Thierry Henry did it to Brad Friedel a long time ago, but it was called back for a free kick. But yeah, like I said, 20, 30 years ago, I think it was still technically a good tackle, but like I said, you're never going to get that call anymore.
No, not today. So you do have to allow the keeper to boot the ball, and it was a pretty very foolish foul, and I'm trying to look up when it actually happened, but
it was around the 30th minute, I think.
Okay.
Because both his cards were only about...
He was off in the 38th minute with the second yellow. So it was about 8-9 minutes apart, so he makes the silly thing trying to close down the keeper for no reason. And then what is your take on his second yellow, knowing that he already had a yellow look to him just minutes before?
We had, because obviously Van Hall kind of ripped him a new one for the second challenge, but I thought the one that he shouldn't have gotten was the first one, where he should have, you know, been a little smarter and just, I mean, I understand why he did it. He was trying to do, you know, a professional foul type of situation where you're holding up the a counterattacking opportunity, because Hart was trying to, to kick it quick to hit him on the break. But like I said, in modern football, you're just not going to get that call, so you have to let it go. But with that said, obviously, once you've done that, you can't go into a flying tackle, you know, especially several minutes later. You know, when you're fresh in the ref's mind for committing what's going to be viewed as a silly foul, and then it's, you know, if you do make that slide tackle like that, you got to get closer to the ball, because that was the thing. He was nowhere near the ball, and you know, I mean, obviously, the ref had no choice but to send them off.
Mm-hmm. So, Manchester United sees themselves in kind of a mini crisis situation with their center back. Smalling will now be suspended 3 games with the red card.
Rojo dislocated
his shoulder. He's out 2 to 3 months, I think I read today. So I don't know who the heck they're going to play at center back, but we'll see.
We're going to have to play that kid that had the good game a few weeks ago, that Patrick McNair or whatever his name was.
Mm-hmm. And then obviously they have, you know, Phil Jones, but he's, you know, hurt pretty much every other week, it seems like.
Yeah, so they're going to have to go with a pretty young, fairly untested center back pairing.
Mm-hmm. So that's good news for whoever they may be facing here in the future. And sorry, I'm having a hard time.
Possible Schadenfreude, too.
Yeah, that's right. And I'm having a hard time navigating things because I forgot to mention this last week. I wanted to. But whoscored.com has totally redesigned their information pages for the better. I just haven't gotten used to them yet. And they have full-blown chalkboards on there now, Corey. So I don't know if you've checked it out lately.
No, I haven't.
But yeah, it's awesome now. They have full-blown chalkboards on who scored, so it's great. So football analytics is being picked up by pretty much everybody, and so it's a great tool to have for you to be able to view this information and make your own decisions.
Yeah, because it's, you know, I'm not quite the numbers guy that you are, but, you know, even sometimes when you want to make some of the basic assumptions, it, you know, it helps you kind of weed out what certain players actually do.
That's true. Now,
you know,
let's get into
like style of play. So.
No, yeah, I understand. Now let's get into the second situation with this match.
Sure.
And this is what I'm going to label Fellaini Spittlegate.
Whoa, dun, dun, dun.
And I know you have an interesting take on this. So everybody's seen this by now. It looks pretty clear to me that Sergio Aguero's on the ground, on his knees, head to the ground. Fellaini lowers his head to talk to him, and it looks pretty clear that he spits on him in the process.
Well, as I told you, if I was Fellaini's lawyer, I would argue, Your Honor, that's not a spit. My client clearly drools on him, and drooling sometimes is a function of, you know, it's a human function that happens sometimes when you're tired, and clearly my opponent or clearly my client, who has only recently come back from injury, was tired and he drooled on the player who happened to be in the way.
Yeah, because it does look weird. It doesn't look like a spit. It does look more like a drool.
Yeah, which, you know, all jokes aside, is actually in my book, technically more disgusting than being spit on.
Well, yeah, maybe. Now I do want to bring up, now this is fascinating because, you know, we've had this situation in our own sports, and it's been bad. Like, spitting on somebody, at least in our culture, and I think over there too, but especially in ours, is one of the most disgusting things and disrespectful things you can do. Now, we do, just in our American sports, I remember the two big ones. There was the Robbie Alomar baseball, where he spit in an umpire's face.
Yeah, that one. Yeah,
and
that
I do believe
that was a nice loogie.
He got a pretty, yeah, that was the loogie, really. Yeah, that was a loogie. He got a pretty lengthy suspension from that, if I do remember correctly. And then the only other one I could remember, and these both happened in the late 90s, I do believe, is in football. I think, was it Bill Romanowski who spit in the face of J.J. Stokes?
Yes.
Okay, and I don't know, did he get suspended for that? I don't remember.
Yeah, I want to say it was like three games maybe.
So there you go. So I'm just saying, in American sports, I mean, people were outraged. And when these things happened, if you were following then, you know that's what every sports broadcast was talking about, and even the mainstream news was talking about this stuff on a regular basis. So it will be interesting to see about this Fellaini thing, because I didn't see it on the front page of any English website.
Yeah, I didn't either, and I heard it on a couple of the podcasts talking about it. But yeah, I just wanted to bring up another famous one was the don't forget the Keith Hernandez from the bushes spitting on Cosmo Kramer episode.
Oh, yeah. Seinfeld.
Yes, the Seinfeld, yeah, the parody, yeah, of the Kennedy assassination.
Yeah, jeez.
But yeah, it is kind of funny that I think it's one of those things that's left over from, you know, when we were hunter gatherer kind of thing, and you know, when fluids were vital, that we just deem it a pretty disgusting act, and especially you know, if you want to go even off the deep end with all the Ebola scare stuff going around, you know, you find the right court or the right lawyer, and they can argue that, you know, you're a threatening menace and you should be, you know, serving a 90-day suspension or you know, a 90-day jail sentence kind of thing for, you know, some kind of, you know, you made somebody have a sad and they got scared or something.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
But yeah, it's pretty ridiculous. But, you know, like I said, I would argue, hey, my client didn't spit. It was the drool.
Dude, it looked more like a drool to me. And it's possible because he was leaning over. Who knows? Who knows?
Yeah, you know.
All right, so that was the early game on Sunday, the late game on Sunday, where there's only two matches for some reason. Scheduling quirk, I guess. But the second game was Spurs overcoming a pretty rough start to where they allowed Villa to score for the first time in, I think, 50 days was the stretch. They went 50 days without scoring a goal in the league. And, of course, they score within, you know, the first 15 minutes of the match. They score a goal on a complete defensive breakdown. But anyway, what I want to talk about here is this Benteke red card, to where he broke another rule that is in the rule book, but you don't get it called very often, and that is, you know, raising your hand to an opponent.
Yeah,
did you get to see this incident?
Yes, I did. And, you know, again, it's one of those incidents where a lot of it was much ado about nothing.
Oh, no doubt.
In practice, however, like you said, raising your hand to somebody's face, regardless of the amount of contact, is just a no-no. And, you know, unless you're one of the protected boys like a Rooney or a Gerrard, you're going to get sent off for it.
Yes, but my point is, I don't know if you watched the match or not. I guess I'll let you answer that.
No, you didn't. You know, I saw extended highlights, though.
Okay, that's fine. So I'm watching the match live, of course, and you didn't see any of this on camera, but what John Champion was on the call for the international feed, and I heard him say, oh, he raised his hands to an opponent, and I'm like, oh, well, he's going to get sent off. I was like, he's got to get sent off, because if John Champion is picking that out right away, and apparently, you know, the referee didn't see it, but one of his assistants or the fourth official saw it, And basically what happened was, you know, Benteke, there was a couple shoulder-to-shoulder barges on the ball, and he was upset, and he got in the face of Ryan Mason. And Ryan Mason did kind of he confronted him and kind of egged him on. He did head – now, Benteke did get headbutted by Ryan Mason, which is a – you know, that's a bookable offense and maybe getting sent off too if the referee saw it. But, of course, as we know in any sport, the instigator rarely gets in trouble. It's the person who reacts. And so Benteke puts his hand up to the face, his face, and pushes him away. And obviously you can't do that. But the surprising media thing is it was the color guy, and I forget who it was, but it was a prominent color analyst. He was going on and on about, there wasn't that much force, and you really have to look at the intent. And I go, no, that's not how it works, because soccer, these rules were meant because, believe it or not, we've gotten away from that, but soccer was a gentleman's game. And that's why you have all these gentleman-like rules, is because it has, you know, its foundations in that Victorian era of, you know, proper everything. And so, yes, there wasn't a lot of force behind it, but in the spirit of the law and the way the law is written, they had no choice but to send them off.
Well, yeah, it's like the and I hope I don't offend anybody with this, because just listen to the words carefully. But it's the it's similar to the discussion that's going around with the domestic violence thing that's, you know, been a problem lately with the NFL, and of course, you know, so now all those incidents are highlighted. But just meaning that regardless of the situation, most of us are raised, there is no proper situation where you hit a woman. So similarly, it's kind of the same thing, that regardless of regardless of the intent, regardless of the amount of force, like you said, regardless of the amount of contact you make, you just cannot raise your hand to an opponent's face and make contact. It's just, you know, it's basically it's one of those zero tolerance rules that you know, even placing your hand on a guy's face, if the ref sees it, more often than not, you're going to get sent off. So, you know, like you said, that the color guy's issue, even though in practice he may have a point, or you know, like in an everyday situation, he may have a point, you know, where, you know, you may get off for like a assault and battery charge because, you know, there was no force, you know, on a sports field. And especially in soccer, there's just no way that you're going to get away with that kind of thing if the ref sees it.
True. And the number one comparison to American sports, and I was trying to explain to people as well, is the problem with it is that, you know, it's unevenly called. Now, we have the same rule in the NFL to where if you throw a punch, regardless if you land it or not, you're supposedly kicked out of the game. But you see it all the time where guys take swings at people. And these people aren't very smart because they're taking, you know, full swings with a bare hand with someone wearing a helmet, which is pretty stupid. But they do it anyway, and how many times do you see guys get kicked out for that? It's probably 1 in 5, I would say, just from my experience of watching a lot of, you know, NFL games and college football. That's supposed to be an automatic ejection, but it doesn't get called a lot. So that's the same thing in soccer. You see it too where guys raise their hands, and the problem is that over time, because, you know, we're more of a more accepting and more of a rough and tumble society, but maybe not. You know, just in our minds we are, but not in reality. And so these things erode over time.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure what more I could add to that. Because like you said, it's a most things that get labeled a brawl by the media, or, you know, by the sports media in any sport, is rarely an actual brawl. But because of that kind of negative connotation, when people use the, you know, terms like brawl, most leagues and you know, governing bodies of a sport tend to overreact, or you know, what would be an overreaction in everyday life. And like I said, they generally take a fairly, if not a zero tolerance policy, they generally take a really heavy-handed, policy to any, or, you know, to certain types of contact, which, like you said, most of the time throwing a punch is generally a no-no. Although I did find it kind of interesting that there were certain angles that supposedly showed, and again, I'm going by other accounts, not actually seeing it, but there were supposedly other accounts to where one of the other Tottenham players, which I believe one of the guys said it was supposedly Lamella, was kind of, you know, again, not kicking the guy, but kind of doing those little short ankle kick things where you're basically doing it off the ball to wind somebody up. And that was supposedly why Benteke kind of took offense to it. But again, as you said, it's one of those, if you do that and retaliate, you know, you either got to make sure none of the refs are looking, which in this day and age is impossible, especially with all the camera angles, or you just got to, you know, be smart enough to walk away, which obviously in the heat of the moment, most players aren't.
No. So the moral of the story is Villa was up 1-0. Benteke gets sent off, and then Tottenham scores 2 goals in the last, I think it was the last 15 minutes of the match. I think one goal was in the, maybe it was like 82 and then the 90th minute, something like that. So 2 late goals, man up, and they win the game in a match they really had no business being in, really.
Yeah, one of which you knew the new White Hart Lane hero, Harry Hurricane.
Yeah, well, you know, he's scoring goals, so we'll see. I mean, Sherwood started him as the main striker at the end of last year, and he scored, I think, in 4 or 5 straight matches in league play. And he's on a tear in, you know, League Cup, Europa League. I think he has 8 or 9 goals. And so he tallied his first league goal on a deflected free kick. The Lampard special.
Yeah. I'll have a Lampard special with extra deflection, please.
Yes, and that was. There was a lot of deflection on that sucker.
Yes.
So anyway.
Yeah, I'll just, you know, until he does it regularly, I'll just tell you like I do the Dallas Cowboy fans who like Tony Romo, sign him up for a long contract and do it over and over again.
We'll see. I mean, it's not like he's 21 years old, so he's got time to develop. It's interesting. We'll see what happens. All right, so let's now get into a bigger picture here, Corey.
Sure.
And now, you know, there were some uneven scheduling for a while there, but now we are to the point to where every team has played 10 matches. And so in the past couple weeks, we've talked about, you know, hey, is this team legit? Is this team underachieving? Is this team a threat, you know, to finish in European places? And your statement was that you really can't take a serious look at the standings until 10 matches have been played. And so now we're at 10 matches, which is the quarter point of the season, roughly, you know, a little past, because, you know, 38 matches, so 10 is more than a quarter to 38, obviously, with simple maths. So we're at the quarter pole point here, so I just want to get your opinion maybe of some teams on if, you know, if they're in a relegation battle perhaps, or if they're overachieving, you know, with maybe a mid-table spot that they don't deserve, or if there's some teams who are challenging right now for European places. I just want to get your opinion on what you think they will be come the end of the year.
You're going to give me clubs or you just want me to pick?
I don't know. You could give me your initial observations, maybe a couple clubs, and if you don't cover what I want, then I'll ask you more questions. So I'll let you go off the top of your head.
Okay. Yeah, no, I'll just – yeah, I think it's – you know, even though I initially picked them to possibly be in a relegation battle, now that they're 10 games in and in second place, I think it's time that we have to start considering – Southampton as a legitimate club, you know, again, not necessarily for the title, but to possibly, you know, legitimately challenge for a European spot and maybe even the Champions League. Because the thing I like about Southampton, other than Lucy Pinder being, you know, a supporter,
Always the obligatory Lucy Pinder reference.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you know, that's one day I'm gonna get her to tweet me after the show, but no.
Motorboat United, all right.
Yeah, brr. So anyway, yeah, the thing I like about Southampton is they only have given up five goals this year, which is surprisingly, you know, after selling their best defender in Lovren, you know. Where I will, you know, pat ourselves on the back is we did say that Koeman, like a lot of Dutch managers, is, you know, was a good hire because a lot of those Dutch managers are really good at revamping and rebuilding sides annually because there's a lot of roster turnover in the Eredivisie sometimes. But, you know, barring, you know, major injuries, I think it's time that we start considering Southampton as a you know, legitimate, you know, maybe top six team, you know. Okay. obviously adjusting as we go on.
I know we looked at this a couple weeks ago, but let's just look at their upcoming schedule here.
Sure.
Their next two games are pretty soft. They got Leicester and Aston Villa, but I know there is a stretch that we mentioned, that I mentioned a while back, where they play some pretty tough teams on a row here, so let's look when that is.
Yeah, and I will say that up here. Southampton's definitely the kind of club that, depending on how many points they're able to grab around the holiday period when you have that congested fixture, that congested fixture list that, like I said, depending on how many points they're able to get, that's going to determine, I think, you know, how they go into, you know, obviously how they go into the spring. And, you know, if they're able to keep their core, you know, their core healthy and free from injury.
Okay, so after Leicester and then Aston Villa, they have a kind of a mini tough stretch here where they will face Manchester City, Arsenal, and Manchester United three games in a row.
Yeah, although the last several times we played them, they've given us all sorts of trouble, so... you know, that's definitely one that, you know, them along with West Ham, that next time we play them, I'm not looking forward to playing them at all.
Okay, and then you mentioned the holiday period, and this gets a little rough for them, I think. This will challenge their depth. Now, starting with matches on, it would be December the 20th through, what date is that? Through January the 10th. This is what they got. Everton, Crystal Palace, Chelsea, Arsenal, Manchester United. So that'll be a test for them too. So they got two little mini tests. So if they could come out of those, you know, where maybe they win one or two, or, you know, take 4 points out of 9 points in those little, you know, three game stretches.
Yeah, because what, that was five matches? So,
one, two, three, four, five, yes.
Yeah, so say even if they're able to grab, say, maybe 7 points, you know, two wins and a draw out of those five. Because at this point, I would, you know, if I were them, I wouldn't fear Man United at all.
So, no, I wouldn't, yeah.
You know, Chelsea, you know, at this point, I think everybody except City would be considered an underdog against Chelsea. You know, I think they could arguably get, you know, be a favorite against Everton. Is that Everton match home or away?
Let me take a gander. Everton is at home.
Yeah, so that would be one that, you know, they could easily get the 3 points. So if they were to get 7 or possibly 9 from those 15 available points, you know, like I said, that could be the kind of the stretch that, you know, propels them into more momentum going into the spring.
Okay. Is there anybody else here in the table you would like to talk about?
Yeah, I'm a little cool on West Ham now, even though they did play fairly well again to come back from two goals down. And because they're, you know, Sam, when the chips are down, he is going to revert back to a more defensive style. So the fact that they're still kind of high on the table, I don't expect them to drop all that much. But, you know, Obviously, there's a lot of similar type of teams around them. You know, Swansea is only 2 points behind Liverpool, and y'all being Spurs, 3 points behind Everton. Man United and West Brom are only 4 points behind. So, you know, if they do run into a stretch where they drop two or three matches in a row, obviously they can go from 5th to 10th or 11th pretty quickly. So I'm a little cool on them from last week.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens there, and I haven't looked at their schedule at all. So let me burn it up with a little live on-air research just to see what may hold in the future for Sam Alona.
Yeah, so All right. Looks like he's got Villa, Everton. Man, Everton must play everybody.
Got it, yeah. Villa, Everton, Newcastle, West Brom, and then let's jump to the, you know, all-important holiday jumble to where Leicester, Chelsea, Arsenal, West Brom, Swansea, Hull. It's not too terrible. Obviously, Arsenal and Chelsea will be tough back-to-back. But, you know, there's some opportunity for them to do well if need be. So, yeah.
Yeah, because in their next few matches, they play several clubs that are in and around them. So, you know, the proverbial six-pointers. So if they're able to get full or most of the points from those matches, you know, obviously that will give them a little breathing room from some of those clubs.
Okay. Now I guess we'll jump to the bottom of the table and I'll just get your initial reactions.
Sure.
Obviously, we have Burnley at the bottom of the table on 4 points. 10 games through. Is it time to read their death rites? Pretty much.
Not quite yet, but yeah, I mean, they're definitely, you know, not 100%, but you know, it's pretty high, you know, pretty high percentage that they're going to go down. They're not going to be able to score enough goals. It's just a simple, you know, they're a fairly compact team, but you know, at some point you got to score goals, and they just don't have enough.
So best case scenario, they're fighting to get above relegation, maybe into 17th, to stay alive. Maybe best case scenario.
Yeah, like I said, I won't call it, but yeah, they're definitely you know, already in critical condition because, like I said, they're just simply not going to have enough goals in them.
Yeah, so now they could turn that if, you know, maybe they make an astute loan or two or a purchase for an attacking player. So we'll see what their plan is. But as we talked about in the preseason, you said that, and I mentioned this, and their manager mentioned this, that they have a long-term view. So maybe, you know, they're thinking we'll come up. We're not going to spend a whole lot. We'll take the parachute payment. Then we'll add what we need to get back up. You know, that's a risky thing to do because when you go down, you can never be sure if you're going to come back up with how competitive the championship is. So we'll get a really good read in the January window of what they're thinking.
Yeah, because if they don't sign anybody and or you know, if they only make maybe one or two signings, then I think, you know, obviously they're taking that longer view, like you said. Or if, you know, if they say they make three or four signings and they're all loans, I think that's still the long-term view because, you know, the loan signings in January is kind of a, hey, we'll take them, see what happens, and if not, you know, no risk kind of thing or very low risk. But, yeah, I mean, the last few weeks I've heard Sean Dyche, you know, post-game press conferences, and he seems like a pretty sharp dude, so I would kind of think that he would, you know, bite the bullet and just basically say, you know, we'll play with what we got and we'll take our chances, you know, coming back up next year.
Mm-hmm. Which is, as I said, is risky.
Yeah.
But we'll get into that at some other point, I'm sure. Now, next would be QPR, just 4 points above Burnley at 7 points. And, you know, that's a squad with a fair amount of talent and supposedly a top manager.
Yeah, well, they, you know, they arguably should have been ahead at Stamford Bridge at around the 65th minute mark, but I forgot who shot over from a fairly decent position, and of course, inevitably, Chelsea get their late penalty and end up winning the match and getting the full points. But yeah, there was a pretty good period there where QPR surprisingly kind of had Chelsea not quite on the back foot, but, you know, they were definitely leery of QPR in the break.
Mm-hmm. So what would you say in the long haul, 10 games in, is QPR going to be in a relegation battle down to the end?
I think so. But, you know, January is going to be interesting with them because despite their financial troubles, they have Harry at the helm. And if anybody can spend money, it's Harry Redknapp. So
that's exactly January's what I was going to say.
Yeah, January is going to be very interesting around Loftus Road because, like I said, it's supposedly they can't sell – or I'm sorry, so supposedly they can't buy without risking you know, not only relegation into the championship but relegation out of the entire football league if they do get relegated. So, yeah, January is going to be very interesting – because, yeah, I mean, Harry's one of those guys that, you know, he's like the drunk uncle that, you know, if he's got 10 bucks in his pocket, he's going to spend 10 bucks. If he's got 10 grand in his pocket, he's going to spend 10 grand.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. If anybody can convince an ownership group to spend money they don't have, it's Harry.
Yes. You know, Harry is definitely a the wheeler and dealer.
All right. Then currently in a relegation spot, on goal differential, then minus goals scored. On 9 points, you have Leicester with a minus 5 goal differential, but 11 goals scored. And then Crystal Palace is at 9 points, but they have 14 goals scored, so they're currently ahead. Leicester is someone who I thought would, you know, surprise people and get out of there, but they've hit a rough stretch where they've lost 4 out of the last 5 games, with the 5th game being a draw. So what is your prognostication for Leicester City?
Yeah, like several pundits and other podcasts have pointed out that after that Manchester United match, pretty much everybody saw it and goes, well, you know, as long as you sit back against Leicester and don't press high up, then pretty much they don't have anything else because they basically are just hitting everybody on the break. So, you know, the last several games, teams have sat a lot deeper against them. And, you know, Leicester has basically been shown to only have the plan A, you know, to use the cliche. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see because I think at this point it's going to be it's going to come down to whether or not Nigel Pearson is going to be able to adjust his tactics and, you know, do more than just sit back and counter.
Yes, it'll be interesting to see what they do because it seems like they may need, unlike Burnley, who we think needs attacking help, Leicester may need some defensive help.
Yeah, and they you know, obviously, even playing on the counter, I think where they need somebody creative in midfield that's going to be able to do more than just kind of, you know, pump it forward or, you know, hit the wings, you know, to start the counter. If they're able to maybe find somebody who can kind of not quite, you know, not an out-and-out playmaker, but somebody who can kind of hold the ball and maybe be more of kind of a transition type of midfielder or the runner, so to speak. And, you know, because that's a way that if you don't go away from the counter-attacking tactics, that's a simple way that you can kind of adjust the counter-attacking, or, you know, to stick with counter-attacking tactics, but, you know, have an adjustment to your attack, to those same kind of tactics. I hope that made sense.
Yeah, go get Luka Modric.
Yeah!
Leicester, there you go. That'll solve your problems.
Or Nico Kranjčar, or what's the guy that's fallen off the map again? Ravel Morrison.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, West Ham hasn't been using him. No, actually, did they loan him out? I don't.
Yeah, I think they loaned him out
what's
again.
What's the update? So he's in the championship somewhere?
I think so, if I remember correctly. Yeah, they loaned him out again.
Really? That's insane. Let me look this up. Yeah, I forgot about the whole Ravel Morrison fiasco. Let's see where they loaned him out. It says that he is on loan from West Ham at Cardiff City.
So there you go. if that's not a season-long loan, you know, somebody like that might be able to fit into that Leicester City and, you know, give their counterattacking style a little versatility. Or if not, you know, if not him, somebody like that.
Michael Bradley, go rescue him.
Oh, there you go, running and all over the place. Run, huff and puff, and blow your defense down.
He's got a bum foot, so.
Oh, come on. MLS has got a healthcare package, right?
Well, probably they probably put him on Obamacare, so. So I don't know how good that's going to be.
Well, I was just, you know, so I was just going to make a general joke. I don't want to make
– I know. I know. I got into the political realm. Sorry.
Yeah, come on. I just don't want to run all – I just don't want to run the four people left off, you know?
Yes. All right. So there we go. So there's your look at the EPL at the quarter pole. And I guess I should ask if we're going to do this discussion in full. Let's not move on before I ask you. I mean, so Chelsea is in first place right now.
Oh, yeah. Chelsea's title will lose. But
are they going to win the title?
Yeah, if they don't win the title, they've lost it. Somebody else didn't win it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, like I said, if they don't win the title this year, will Mourinho lose his job?
If you would have asked me before the season, I would have said yes, but strangely, I think no.
No, I'm inclined to agree now, too. I don't know why.
Yeah, I think Abramovich, for some reason, would give him another year this time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because he's definitely turned them into a little more than just a, you know, park the bus operation, even though they're, you know, they're still well capable of doing that. And that was part of the reason why Abramovich got rid of him the first time, was that
because of Mateo, too. He got rid of him because he was so defensive.
Yeah, so he, you know, even though they've won titles recently, they've, you know, he still kind of has that I want to play pretty thing. So I think the fact that Mourinho's kind of opened up a little more to that, I think Abramovich, which this is going to sound funny, but I think Abramovich would be a little more forgiving this time. But yeah, he wouldn't last beyond next year for sure if they didn't win it. But like I said, if they don't win it, it's going to be, you know. If City were to win it, you know, obviously it wouldn't be a miracle, but yeah, if Chelsea doesn't win this title, I'll be shocked.
Now, I know this is daft here, but I know we've made this suggestion before, but if Abramovich just wants attacking football, as we just discussed, I'm pretty certain that Harry is going to be available at the end of the year when QPR gets relegated. So go get Harry. Put him in Chelsea. And with all that attacking talent, that would be a very entertaining team.
Oi, there's no limit on this transfer credit card, mate.
Well, I just mean from an attacking standpoint. Yeah, I'm not thinking about the transfers. That would be incredible, too. Harry with basically unlimited amounts of money to spend.
Whew, yeah, it's man, that would be interesting. Harry's put in bids for Ronaldo, Messi, Sanchez, Lewandowski and Mesut Ozil.
Oh my goodness.
But yeah. So like I said, if Chelsea don't win this title, I'll be shocked.
We'll leave that there. So we'll see. As I said, I don't know. We'll see what Mourinho does. All right, let's wrap up. That's the end of our EPL talk, and now we will wrap up with a pretty serious issue here, and there's a lot of news breaking. Now, it's been leaking out slowly, but finally now I think we're kind of at a point to where we could report a lot of things. So let's talk about this 2022 World Cup. And I know a lot of people are focusing on this, and we will too, but let's just realize that the 2018 Russia World Cup has almost just as many issues due to the, you know, the geopolitical climate of today. And for whatever reason, nobody's focusing on that. And that's how bad this Qatar deal is that it's so far away and still it's the number one pressing issue because it's just completely shambolic. But let's just update our listeners on what's going on with this, Corey. Now, I have been on the record of saying that I do not believe that these games would not be played in Qatar, but and they would be played, you know, in the United States or England, just because those are the two countries with the infrastructure to be able to host the games on such a short notice basis. But I'm starting to believe now that FIFA is so entrenched now because they're trying to make a political statement that they are ignoring all, you know, reason at multiple levels, and they are entrenched. And I do believe these games will go on no matter what. But let's get to the news here. Sorry for the rambling here. But it has been pretty much announced by FIFA that they want the games to be played in either January or February of 2022 or November or December of 2022. But, now listen to this, but they will not take off the table. There are reports that the Qatar 2022 World Cup may actually be played in the winter of 2023, which is interesting, all because playing in the winter 2022 could possibly clash with the Winter Olympics. So that's the first bit of news. So I'll let you react to that information.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Just logically thinking about that, I would think that the World Cup would trump the Olympics from what I know, but I don't know, because it seems like the interest in the Olympics has kind of waned recently. Maybe that's just me personally, but I'm not really sure why they would kick it back a year like that, because like I said, for me, I think everybody would choose to rather watch the World Cup than the Olympics if there was everybody, meaning everybody, the majority of you know, viewership around the world, I think they would watch the World Cup over the Olympics, but, you know.
Okay. And I'm inclined to agree, but I will, after I make my next point, I will give you my reason why I think the 2023 date is realistic and the reason behind it. Now, it has been widely reported that the top European leagues, the big five is what I've heard. So, you know, obviously that includes England, Spain, France, Germany, Italy, have all agreed to a May of 2022 date, that they would be amenable to that, to where they would just, during the league season, they would just play more midweek games. So that the league season would end sometime in April for all the leagues, giving the players a two-week break before the World Cup, which would start in May of 2022. Now, it doesn't look like FIFA's king on that.
I was going to say, because that's going to clash with Champions League dates.
Yes, and that too. So you would have to re-alter not also the league season, but the Champions League as well, exactly. So that is a big concern. But that is, the European leagues have gotten together reportedly and decided that that is their recommendation to FIFA, that you make it in May, we'll figure a way to work it out in the league calendar and with the Champions League. You know, maybe they lessen the group games, because, you know, I didn't know this a long time ago. Did you know that a long time ago, the Champions League was actually, you played one game against each team, and it was like some kind of random draw if you played the team home or away.
Yeah, well, that was like the first few years. There was only four groups of four or something. But yeah, it's I don't know, because that's going to be interesting, because obviously with them wanting to expand all the tournaments, which is basically just strictly for TV reasons, that's going to be interesting, because again, you start cutting games, that's the kind of thing that aggravates sponsors, because sponsors give money because they know they're going to have certain amount of ad time or you know, number of ad spots, or, you know, meaning number of ad opportunities per game. So, you know, that's one of those I'll believe it when I see it kind of things. Now, granted, in the past, soccer, unlike most sports, has contracted at times strategically here and there, but, you know, that was 20, 25 years ago, and as it's moved more towards an American type of system where everything is more geared towards TV, again, that's one of those I'll believe it when I see it things.
All right, here we go. Round of applause. Okay. You beat me to the punch. And TV money.
Yes.
In the end, we have lost. FIFA has pretty much, they're not going to change their opinion based on common sense. They're not going to change their opinion among political pressure. The only thing that is going to get FIFA to change is TV money. Because all these TV places and these sponsors have agreed to these enormous sums for, you know, the Champions League and the World Cup, because they know that it is the pinnacle of the sport and it's going to get the most attention. But if you play the World Cup outside of the winter, then you're risking that revenue. So that, I believe that's the only way this doesn't happen, is if the TV sponsors say, you move the World Cup, we're not going to pay you. Because I'm sure that's got to be in the contract. These TV people aren't, you know, especially here in the United States, where Fox has just paid more money than anybody else in the world for the rights to the World Cup. They're not going to allow the World Cup to get moved to, you know, January, to where it's going to go head-to-head against NFL playoffs in this country.
And college football and college
and
basketball.
College football and yeah, and all kinds of stuff, yeah. So that is our only hope. And that's why I think this 2023 move to not collide with the Olympics is also possible too, is because the Olympics are also a very big TV sponsor thing. And so if you have the World Cup and the Olympics going at the same time, the TV sponsors, who, you know, oftentimes are going to overlap in those two markets, are going to say, no, we're not going to pay you money. And there's got to be, these TV companies, I'm sure, have all kinds of wording to say when these games will be played. And if they refuse to pay, FIFA will cave. So that's our only hope of these games getting moved, if the sponsors, and I would imagine it would have to happen in the next year or two, where all the sponsors and the TV broadcasters are going to have to band together and say, no, we will not let you do this.
Well, yeah, because that's what I was just about to say, is that if nothing else, it's headed towards a legal battle, because, again, as you said, these TV companies and sponsors have signed these contracts, and that if they move everything, FIFA's technically breaking the contract. So it would, now granted, international law, which, you know, most of it technically doesn't actually exist, because especially when you start getting into certain countries that don't recognize the World Court and only recognize certain portions of it, you know, you're going to get into all sorts of, you know, legal mumbo jumbo, because that's one of the things that I don't think that Qatar will actually lose the World Cup, is because one of the larger sponsors and one of the larger networks that's putting up most of the money is Al Jazeera, which is, you know, obviously an Arabic based network. So for FIFA to revoke the World Cup and send it somewhere else, they would be losing a huge amount of money from Al Jazeera, which, again, that's one of those I'll believe it when I see it kind of things. So anyway, like I said, to make a short story long, if nothing else, they're headed for a really big legal battle if they do change the game times, because they're basically going to be technically breaking the contracts with these people. And, you know, at a certain point, you know, these companies aren't going to stand for it. Or if nothing else, they're going to demand that FIFA drop the rights charges for the following World Cup.
It's possible, but we'll say, I don't think they're going to overpay with the promise that FIFA will drop the prices. Now, here we go. Here's my daft opinion of the week. This is our luck. This is what's going to happen. Jurgen Klinsmann, after a pretty good 2018 World Cup, will be retained for an unprecedented third cycle as American coach. We are going to have – he's going to load in, you know, a bunch of Euros we've never heard of. A lot of, you know, younger kids we've never heard of at this point are going to be loaded up on the team. The United States will be one of the best teams in the world.
Klaus Tormeister.
Hold on, listen. Fox in a Qatar battle will say, no, we're not going to spend all this money because it's going to, you know, it's going to clash with our NFL coverage. Fox will say, no, we're dropping out. You could play the World Cup, but we're not going to pay it. The World Cup in 2022 will not be broadcasted on US TV, and the US will make it to the final.
I like
it. That's what's going to happen. It's going to be crazy.
Yeah,
we're all going to be watching streams to watch Klinsmann in his third cycle play for a World Cup title.
Yeah, or it's going to be like some kind of random, like AMC picks it up on the cheap, like on the eve, like on the eve of the final.
No, it'll be even worse. Like, what's the worst network you could think of? Let me think. I mean, Fox is pretty bad. I mean, so
yeah, well, maybe Netflix will be like some giant space conglomerate by then, and will be Netflix. They'll live stream it off of Netflix, you know,
like or Amazon Prime or something.
Yeah,
or
Roku or whatever those other ones are called.
Roku. Yeah, it'll be like on the Bravo network or something, or Esquire.
Yeah, who knows? By then, maybe Hulu will sponsor the Golden Ball.
That's true. I don't know. Yeah, and at that time, maybe cable television ceases to exist. My goodness.
Yeah, there'll still be enough old congressmen by then that, you know, we'll still keep cable alive.
So, there we go. There we go. That's pretty funny, though.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's going to be, I mean, we've been complaining about this for several years, you know, on our previous podcast incarnation, we were complaining about it. It's just, it's going to be a debacle all around. No matter what ends up happening, where they move it, when they play it, you know, whether they end up playing it in Timbuktu or North Pole, South Pole, Jupiter Pole, whatever, it's going to be a disaster. Or the play won't necessarily be a disaster, but it'll be a PR and political disaster, I think.
Mm-hmm. And then there could be to the point to where, I don't know if this would happen, and we'll end this here. This has been a good discussion, but we're going too long, and the show producer in me is getting angry.
Oh, well.
Yeah. But anyway, it could be the point to where, you know, these clubs, first of all, these clubs own the players. And what happens if the leagues and the clubs don't agree to a Winter World Cup? What happens if they just say, you know what, we're not going to release them? What is FIFA going to do to the clubs? What can FIFA do to the clubs? If the clubs say, you know what? No, we're not releasing our players. Tough luck.
Well, they can fine the shit out of them, for one.
Can they? I mean, do they have that legal right?
Because they signed that thing several years ago where they're supposed to release the clubs. Or the
clubs
are supposed to release the players.
I know, but they don't. If FIFA is playing an unprecedented, you know, Winter World Cup, if I was a club, I'd say, screw you. We're not risking that.
Well, yeah, well, you're getting into the philosophical thing that I've always argued against, like the BCS, or, you know, in the old days before the SEC controlled the BCS, basically, that what's to stop, and that's basically what the G14 was about in the 90s and prior, and what the Champions League was a compromise to, is that at some point there's going to be enough clubs that have enough fans and enough power that are basically going to tell FIFA, you know what? Go to hell. Go screw yourself. We're going to start a new organization that's going to serve our interest and not your interest.
And maybe that's what happens in that situation. Because, yeah, these clubs aren't going to do that knowing that they have no legal right. Maybe they just pull out of FIFA altogether and start their own thing.
You know, because that's my thing about the forgot the exact issue, but somebody was saying something about what UEFA and the Champions League wanted to do, and I was – you know, I responded that, well, if that were to happen, you would see the rise of something like the G14 again, which for you youngsters out there, the G14 was a organization that existed in the 80s and 90s of the 14 largest clubs in Europe that at one time once threatened to exit their leagues and start a European Super League, which is why the Champions League expanded the first time as a compromise to stop these teams from basically leaving UEFA and FIFA.
Yeah, so I think we're facing a similar battle.
You know, at some point it's definitely going to be an issue again for sure, because, you know, at some point it's one of the underlying themes in all of politics, no matter what field you're in. At some point, you know, where does the authority lie? Does it lie with the individual, or does it lie with the collective, or you know, where does it or you know, is it somewhere in between? And if it is, at what point, you know, who has more authority? Is it the collective or is it the individual? In this case, you know, the clubs or the governing body.
Exactly. So as our intro man says in our little ditty that we've had, says that we are the Two Daft Yanks and we talk about all aspects of soccer. And there you go. So not too many people are going to be willing to tackle this monster and say what we did just now.
Yeah, and how many podcasts are you going to hear philosophy and political theory melded with topics about UEFA and FIFA and clubs and all that stuff?
Yeah, maybe we should have our philosopher of the week, and we give a famous quote by that philosopher, and then somehow relate it back to soccer. I think we could do it.
Oh well, yeah, well. You know, part of the every scare, that could be the one of my favorite H.L. Mencken quotes about, you know, the hobgoblins and always being scared to death, so you kowtow to the authority.
Well, there we go, see? So maybe we'll have to do some research on this and see if we can make that happen.
Yeah.
So there you go. So there's your Qatar Dumpster Fire 2022 update.
In fact, that should be the official name of the 2022-2023 World Cup, the Dumpster Fire.
The Dumpster Fire, that could be the logo.
Yeah. Oh, oh exactly, yeah.
Is that a bunch of soccer balls and a dumpster on fire? I like
yeah.
it. Maybe I'll mock that up.
If I got exactly, you got somebody kicking a free kick into a flaming dumpster. Qatar 2023.
Yeah, I know. It's unbelievable that the 2022 World Cup could be played in 2023.
Yeah,
how about that?
Because, again, Qatar's not going to lose it, because if they do lose the World Cup, all the creepy crawlies about all the bribes are going to come out, and FIFA's not going to deal with it. So.
Well, no, the bribes, it's already been proven that they took the bribes. They said, yeah, we took the bribes. Oh, well, tough luck. So there's not much more they can do.
True.
I mean, they've already admitted they took the bribes. They took the bribes and said, yeah, you caught us. We still don't care.
Well, yeah, well, see, and that's where the FIFA guys could have been old-time Louisiana legislators, where up until 96, I think it was illegal to offer the bribe. It was not illegal to take the bribe.
Nice.
Yeah, viva Louisiana.
Yeah. All right, so that's going to wrap up this week's show. Thank you, Corey, for a lively discussion and everything there. Obviously, we have the Champions League kicks off tomorrow. I think tomorrow is Barcelona-Liverpool. Not Barcelona, Real Madrid, sorry.
Oh, what's the difference?
Yeah.
Gold jacket, green jacket.
So they're going down there. So there's that, and then we got, you know, league games in the weekend, and then we got the international break creeping up on us, unfortunately.
Can't, man, this international breaks are like a bad rash. They just keep coming back every once in a while.
So, all right. So, thank you so much. I hope you enjoyed the show. As we said, please always, if you like the show, tell somebody about the show and spread the love. So, for Corey Chatelain, I'm Chad Smith. Enjoy your week.
Alexis Sanchez es el máquina eterno.
This has been the Two Daft Yanks podcast. If you like the show, be sure to find the Yanks at TwoDaftYanks.com or at TwoDaftYanks on Twitter. There, you can stay up to date on all the Two Daft Yanks action by subscribing to the show.